This is Beam Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Alejandra Larivalat. This program.
This is Doug Gillard of Guided by Voices, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Accra.
Just remember, this is your radio station, and to keep it going smoothly, it helps if you become a sustaining supporter. What that means is you go to our website, you click on donate, and you make a monthly donation, which we will take it out of your credit card for you. Actually, I think it notifies you every month to make sure you still want to do it, and just kind of give whatever you can give monthly. $10 a month, $5 a month.
Right.
It's not hard. It's not hard.
No, it's a good idea.
If you care about this station.
It's a very good idea.
Become a friend of WGXC now by going to wgxc.org/donate.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar. All Together Now is a collaborative local news show. Anyone can learn.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network in sports.
You've tuned in to All Together Now, WGXC's local news show for the Hudson Valley and Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. Today we'll hear an excerpt of the Vera Institute of Justice's meeting from July 9th about the Greene County Jail, and also a news report from the Sanctuary for Independent Media's WOOCLP about an immigration protest July 6th in Albany. Stay tuned for the local news, weather, and more on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network, network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews. Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
The Public News Service daily newscast for Tuesday, July the 10th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Trump picks Judge Brett Kavanaugh for the U.S. Supreme Court. Also on the Tuesday rundown, Nebraska farmers deliver double harvest to SNAP recipients and an urgent call for blood donations in states like Ohio. First, our top story, President Donald Trump nominated federal judge Brett M. Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court on Monday night. In doing so, the Washington Post reports Trump was elevating a conservative stalwart with deep ties to the Republican establishment to succeed retiring Justice Anthony M. Kennedy and triggering a partisan war over the court's future.
Impeccable credentials, unsurpassed qualifications, and a proven commitment to equal justice under the law.
In accepting the nomination, Kavanaugh said no president has ever consulted more widely or talked with more people from more backgrounds to seek input about a Supreme Court nomination. Meantime, a federal judge heard final arguments Monday in a case challenging the Environmental Protection Agency's decision not to ban a widely used pesticide linked to neurodevelopment damage in children.
A coalition of labor and health organizations represented by Earth Justice went before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in Seattle, urging the court to force the EPA to ban the chemical chloroperaphos, which was declared unsafe during the Obama administration. Virginia Ruiz, Director of Occupational and Environmental Health at Farm Workers Justice, says the product, which is used all around the country, has studies showing it's too dangerous and should be a concern in Florida's agricultural industry.
There are many farm workers and many residents of rural communities in Florida that are exposed to chloroperaphos. And it's important. People should be concerned about the impact on their health.
A Dow Chemical spokesman said in a statement, Dow AgroSciences remains confident that authorized uses of chloroperaphos products offer wide margins of protection for human health and safety. Last year, the EPA refused to ban chloroperaphos, claiming the science was unresolved and decided it would study the issue until 2022. I'm Tramell Gomes.
And Nebraskans struggling to make ends meet are getting a boost from local farmers, and it's a two-way street. Eric Galatas tells us farmers are also benefiting from the Double Up Food Bucks program.
Morgan Hartline with the University of Nebraska explains the incentive program lets recipients of SNAP, the program formerly known as food stamps, double their buying power for locally grown fruits and vegetables at participating farmers markets and grocery stores.
Not only is the SNAP participants getting more fresh fruits and vegetables into their diet, but the farmers are getting more customers, same with the grocery stores, and that money is really staying in the economy.
Last year, Nebraska joined 22 other states with a Double Up pilot program in Lincoln that included two farmers markets, a mobile market, and an independent grocery store. This year, the program expanded to Omaha and Beatrice, which Hartline notes brings the program within reach of a majority of the state's SNAP recipients. Critics of SNAP claim the program encourages unemployment, and the U.S. House recently passed a farm bill that would expand work requirements in order to receive benefits. The requirement was rejected by the U.S. Senate.
More than 1,000 farmers have reaped economic benefits from the Double Up Food Bucks program, which was launched in Detroit in 2009. With a busy 4th of July holiday weekend over, emergency officials are hoping Ohioans may have some time to help save lives in their community. Mary Sherman explains.
The American Red Cross has issued an urgent call for eligible blood donors, as donations are being sent to hospitals faster than they are coming in. Rodney Wilson with the American Red Cross in Ohio says during the summer months, people are more involved in activities that could cause traumatic injuries.
That can include motorcycling, taking long road trips and being in a car accident, boating, even mowing your lawn. Some of those things could end up causing a traumatic injury that might require you to receive blood, and yet fewer people give during that time.
An estimated 550 fewer blood drives were held across the country last week than during an average week, resulting in 15,000 fewer donations than needed. Wilson notes donations are also down because educational institutions are closed for summer. Blood drives at high schools and colleges account for about 20% of all blood donations.
And finally, Ros Brown tells us a bipartisan bill scheduled to be heard by the U.S. Senate tomorrow. It would address the nearly $12 billion backlog of repairs and maintenance within the National Park Service.
The Restore Our Parks Act would not fund all the deferred maintenance, but the $6.5 billion included in the bill would go a long way toward fixing the problem. America's parks have never been more popular, with 331 million visitors last year. Dee Burks with the Raton Chamber of Commerce says the federal government is violating the public trust by not preserving designated parks for future generations.
40 years ago, they didn't see millions of visitors, and now they do.
And those facilities, number one, were never built for that sort of visitation, and number two, haven't been maintained at all.
The legislation would establish the National Park Service Legacy Restoration Fund, meant to reduce the backlog of maintenance by using money the government gets from energy development, including onshore and offshore drilling. According to the Pew Charitable Trust Restore America's Parks campaign, New Mexico's maintenance backlog is $123 million for roads, trails, restrooms, and more.
The bipartisan bill has support from Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke as well as conservation groups. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for newsing and cruising with Public News Service. We are member listener supported and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
Here is the regional weather forecast for the Hudson Valley and Capital Region.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a 30% chance of showers, maybe thunderstorms, after 10 a.m. on Tuesday. Otherwise, mostly sunny with a high near 83. Low around 60 Tuesday night with another 30% chance of rain. Wednesday should be mostly sunny with a high near 77, a low around 56. Thursday should be sunny with a high near 78 and a low around 59. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, creative community radio.
Next, we have these reports.
You're listening to radio news about radio waves. Headlines from the ether. Headlines.
Ars Technica reports that on July 5th, the Federal Communications Commission announced it denied a petition to reverse a decision taking away a broadband subsidy from many Native Americans. The FCC voted 3-2 in November 2017 to make it more difficult for tribal residents to get a $25 per month lifeline subsidy that reduces the cost of internet or phone service. Small wireless carriers and tribal organizations have also sued the FCC in the United States Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit over the issue. Quote, petitioners have not shown that they are likely to succeed on the merits of their claims, unquote, the FCC said in its July 5th announcement. Quote, the 2017 Lifeline Order contains a comprehensive explanation of the basis for the Commission's decision to limit enhanced tribal support for rural tribal areas and to target such support to facilities-based providers, unquote. Americans with incomes at or near federal poverty guidelines can get the Lifeline subsidies, though the current Republican-led FCC is doing all it can to limit who receives the benefits. Sprint is the only mobile phone service carrier actively participating in the Lifeline program now, according to the petition. The FCC decision blocks small cell phone services users from receiving the benefits. Quote, approximately two-thirds of eligible low-income consumers on tribal lands have chosen non-facilities-based eligible telecommunications carriers as their Lifeline provider, demonstrating the overwhelming success of the model, unquote, the petition to the FCC said. Quote, at the same time, facilities-based wireless carriers have retreated from the Lifeline program across the country, including in many states home to American Indian tribes like petitioner Crow Creek in South Dakota. In more than a dozen states, AT&T and Verizon relinquished their status as ETCs. AT&T and Verizon continue to apply for and receive permission to relinquish their ETC status in additional states and stopped applying for ETC status in new states long ago, unquote. T-Mobile has, quote, largely phased out Lifeline service, explaining that Lifeline was not a valuable or sustainable product for its base of subscribers, unquote, the petition said. Quote, Sprint is the only one that still participates meaningfully as a retail provider in the Lifeline program, but Sprint does not provide Lifeline service on tribal lands, unquote. The changes will take effect after October 2018, depending on when they are approved by the U.S. Office of Management and Budget. I'm Tom Rowe reporting for Wavefarm, Standing Wave Radio and WGXC.
All Together Now airs Monday through Saturday, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM in Greene and Columbia Counties and WOOC LP 105.3 FM in Troy.
All right, All Together Now. Ready?
All Together Now is a new evening news show brought to you by WGXC in Greene and Columbia Counties and WOOC in Troy. The show is a unique, community-based collaboration between listeners and programmers, both on air and off. If you want to get involved, send us an email at info@wgxc.org. Unhappy about something you heard on All Together Now? Or maybe you have a strong opinion about an issue. Energy, agriculture, the environment, the Common Core standards, or broadband access. Don't keep it to yourself. Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message, and we'll play it on the air. Leave a 3-minute message, 518-291-9492, with your take for all you hear. Again.
Of being in complete unity with each other, harmony with each other, and not letting the man maneuver us into fighting one another. As long as we practice brotherhood among ourselves, and then others who want to practice brotherhood with us, we're for that. But I don't think that we should run around trying to love somebody who doesn't love us.
Get it? Take a look into the sky and see it scraping the buildings. Or look into the mirror, see the face of resilience. My heart and frustration is in it. When I spit it, it's vintage. Soul molded into my own image. Yeah.
One thing I can tell you is you got to be free.
It ain't hard.
Here's a July 9th meeting organized by the Vera Institute of Justice about the Greene County Jail held in the Greene County Legislature's building in Catskill. You can go to the WGXC archives at wgxc.org to hear a recording of the full meeting, recorded from a live web stream from Diana Abadi from the Mountaintop Progressives using the WGXC app that's free in the App Store.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for making time to be here in your busy schedules and to care as much as we do about the use of incarceration in jail in New York and specifically in your county. I get paid for a living to do this work. I love this work, but you all are coming here as people who are from Greene County, who really care about the decisions your county makes and know that it really means a lot to us that you're taking time to hear from us. And so, Lori, with that amazing introduction, one thing I want to say is we're not really here to give guidance. Like, we don't know Greene County in the way that all of you all know Greene County. I want to make that very, very clear. So any things that we sort of say about Greene County that we know from our research or from talking to you folks that doesn't sound right, stop us. Let us know, because it's really important that we are working with the right information, accurate data, and that whatever we put out there is correct, because decisions, and this is perhaps one of the biggest decisions that Greene County has made in a long, long time, a capital construction project about whether or not to build a new jail, and that's a decision that literally generations of residents of Greene County will have to sort of, you know, bear the weight of, depending on which way that decision goes. And again, we're not here to weigh in on that decision. I'll be totally honest. The work I do is very much about how can we have perhaps fewer people in jail across New York State. You know, I was thinking about what to share with you all, and one thing that really occurred to me is something, you know, a criminal justice expert, Mike Green, who actually runs the State Division of Criminal Justice Services, he said, and he has been a county prosecutor, he has been the sort of chief criminal justice policy person for the state for many years, and he says, you know, about jails, if you build them, they will come. And what he means by that is if you build a jail and if you have enough beds, they do get filled, because that's just the nature of what jail construction and making it sort of worth it. That's just what happens, and we've seen that happen again and again. And so that's really what where I wanted to start, to just make that clear, that if Greene County makes a decision to have more beds available, chances are they will get filled. And the question that you all have to grapple with is that the right thing for Greene County? And so I want to do three things today, and I want this to be very informal. I want you to jump in and ask questions or raise a comment or a concern as I go through my presentation, but I have three things I want to make sure that we cover. For one, I want to sort of zoom out a little bit and talk about what are some examples of new jail construction or not constructing a new jail across the rest of the state that might be instructive for Greene County? In preparing for today, and Chloe, who is an intern with Vera this summer, And has been doing a tremendous amount of work, literally combing through the minutes of every public safety committee meeting on this issue, reading about Greene County. We've read the Richie Greene report from a couple of years ago. We have read the media coverage of what to do about the jail. It's really
and
clear.
Since you're letting us jump in, what I wanted, Chloe made a timeline of how this progressed, and all of us have participated in one way or another, and so we have these little pieces of the picture here. But that timeline turns out to be remarkably valuable. And so I'm grateful even for that aspect of the research. Just where were we? How did we get here? What did we do all of that?
Yep.
That's a really important resource.
Yeah, absolutely. And the timeline that Scott is referring to is quite literally going through all of the documents that we've seen and sort of mapping out from about a decade ago how did the sort of concerns from the State Commission of Corrections about the existing Greene County Jail, how did those start to manifest? What was the correspondence with Sheriff Seeley? And what led to the decisions in April of this year to actually shutter the current facility? So if folks are interested, that is something we certainly can share with you all. It's a timeline we created essentially for ourselves to help educate us. We shared it with Lori and with a few others, and it sounds like it might be a helpful document for everyone. So anything that we have, the PowerPoint, any materials that we reference that you want to see, we'll be more than happy to share it. So as I said, I want to sort of zoom out and share some examples from other parts of the state because we at VERA do a lot of work around the rest of the state as well as nationally and internationally to think about using incarceration just more judiciously and fairly and thoughtfully. And I want to hone in on some things that I think are opportunities for Greene County to consider, many of which you have already talked about and considered, but I think it's worth just sort of highlighting again, knowing what has worked in other places, what might be here for you to consider. And then third, I just want to touch upon some research we've done about shared services in a regional jail with Columbia County. We know that this has been a conversation that you all have already been having, and I just want to give you some of the research we've done about the feasibility of doing so here. So with no further ado, Lori already introduced VERA, but VERA is an organization that's existed since 1961. Our very first project was, in fact, in New York City, where our founder, Herb Sturz, realized that there were far too many people in jail in Manhattan, in a jail called the Tombs, because, quite literally, it is like a jail cell that leads to people's deaths, right? And he realized lots of people were there who just were there because they couldn't afford bail. They were there because of their poverty or other circumstance, and they weren't actually a threat to public safety or a public safety risk. And so we got our start really working on bail and getting people out of jail. And then over the last 50 years, we have continued to do this kind of work, both around New York City, New York State, nationally, as well as internationally. And how I see our work is we really want to rethink the use of jails, not to say that there's never a place for them. Obviously, there is. But we can be much more thoughtful about who we put in jail and who we might want to consider treating elsewhere or doing something different than simply using jail. And so as Lori mentioned, we created a website last fall that if you haven't taken a look, it might just be interesting or instructive for you. But we basically mapped out what is the use of jail and incarceration across New York State. And there was a figure that really stood out to me as somebody who loves data and numbers and research, which is across New York State, there are 25,000 people in jail on any given day. And in fact, 3 out of 5 are in jail outside of New York City.
So jail and prison.
I'm just going to interject here. And Scott, this isn't directed at you. It's just because we're recording it. If we can hold off on questions until the end. I have some note cards, though, that I'll give. And it'll just make recording go more smoothly.
So you also suggest that we jump in. And the issue is whether it's a prison or a jail.
Yep, so it's just jail.
25,000 in jail.
25,000 in New York State who are in jail. So county facilities like the Greene County Jail, Columbia County, Buffalo Jail, like those kinds of jails. If you want to know our prison numbers, there's about 52,000 New Yorkers in prison today. So across the board, jails and prisons, we have over 75,000 New Yorkers in jail and prison. 25,000 are specifically just in county jails. And it used to be that New York City was where most people were in jail in New York State. And that has changed tremendously, just literally in the past 15 years, where now, in fact, more people are in jail in the counties outside of New York City. And so why do I bring this up? Because what we are seeing is in New York City, there's been a lot of work done to sort of roll back mass incarceration, to think about using jail differently. And that same effort and those same resources and that same attention just hasn't been focused on upstate counties, on counties outside of New York City. And so that's the work that I do, is I work not only in New York City, but I am working right now with the Cortland County Legislature, who are at a decision essentially close to one that you are making about whether or not to build a new county facility. Likewise with Tompkins County, with a number of other counties across the state. And then nationally, we've worked in Oklahoma. Oklahoma City has done a lot of work to not build a new jail. And there are some other places similarly that we can bring up examples that we've learned in our work. And so this is important because one thing I want to point out is in Greene County, you've in fact experienced sort of no increase in crime. Crime has actually gone down in Greene County. And yet the use of jail has pretty much stayed the same over the past several years. And what it suggests is that even though there's less crime happening, you're using jail more, right? Or you're using jail in ways that feel like, well, there's perhaps some other alternative, something else you can consider. And so just to zoom out for a second, I want to talk about two counties in New York. The first one is Ulster County, our neighbor. Ulster County back in 2007 built a new jail. And to the point of if you build it, they will come, this is the jail incarceration rate in Ulster County over the last 15 years from before 2000 to up to 2016. And what you can see is that Ulster County's jail incarceration rate, meaning the number of residents from Ulster County who are in jail per 100,000 residents, remains sort of below the statewide average, which is about 200 residents per 100,000, until about 2007, when Ulster County built the new jail that you know well, because some members of some Green residents are there right now since your current jail closed. And what you can see is since that time, since 2007, the jail incarceration rate went up. It actually went above the state average. Again, the idea is if you put beds online, they get filled. Ulster County made a decision in the past couple of years to decarcerate, to take less people. Some of that is that they are actually inboarding fewer inmates from other counties. But very much, if you look at just the county, that the number from Ulster County, that number has consistently gone up since they built a new, bigger jail. On the other hand, compare that to a place like Tompkins County, which is Ithaca and the surrounding towns and villages. And they have been confronting the idea of building a new jail for the last decade, and they have consistently made a decision to not build a new jail. Instead, what they've been choosing to do is to figure out, what can we do before we get to the point of incarceration? Can we do things differently with the police? Can we do things differently with the courts? And how we're using bail to limit the number of people who are in jail in Tompkins County. And what you can see is their jail incarceration rate has always been below the statewide average, and in fact, it has consistently stayed essentially the same over time. And I posit that that's because they just haven't given themselves the margin to actually put more people in jail. They've had to be deliberate and careful and focused about how they address crime in their county. And so again, the reason I bring this up is because it's a decision that you all can make, and it's a response that actors such as the police and the sheriff's office and judges, they can actually choose to do things differently. It's not simply a foregone conclusion that everybody ends up in jail. And so if you compare the two, you can see sort of more obviously what I'm talking about, Ulster County's increase in jail incarceration while Tompkins County has stayed essentially the same. And so just to put...
Could I interrupt?
Yeah,
I apologize because I'm also attending to space. So if you said this, the Ulster County increase in the incarceration rate post-construction of the jail, to be clear, was not commensurate with an increased crime rate at all.
No, nope,
I believe that there is sometimes a sense that, you know, that there's a direct correlation between those two, and I think your point was that, in fact, is not the case, and that was not the case in Ulster County, correct?
That's very true. So I will look to exact numbers for you, but I know from studying Ulster County that they had no uptick in crime. In fact, their crime rate has remained about the same over the last several years, but that increase that you saw was essentially the same kinds of cases are coming through the courts, but now that since there's an option to put more people in jail.
Hi, this is Teddy Thompson, and you're listening right now to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, Community Radio in Greene and Columbia Counties.
That's very, very good. Thank you.
Fridays on WGXC are made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Shelley Wiener of Germantown, New York. Sustaining supporters like Shelley are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Healthcare Consortium, a rural health network dedicated to improving access to health care and supporting the health and well-being of the people in our rural community. Throughout 2018, the Healthcare Consortium will be celebrating 20 years of serving the residents of Columbia and Greene counties. To learn more about the Healthcare Consortium and its services, please visit www.columbiahealthnet.org or call 518-822-8820.
Here's an interview from our partners at WOOCLP from the Sanctuary for Media Art in Troy, New York. You can go to the SoundCloud page for Media Sanctuary or look up the Sanctuary for Media Art webpage or Facebook page online for more information or to hear the complete interview.
Last Friday, there was a protest at the local Office of Homeland Security by people pushing for the abolition of Immigrants and Customs Enforcement, also known as ICE. The government organization has been responsible for immigration control of the United States for the last 15 years. WOOC correspondent Chris Scully went to report.
Hello, this is Christopher Scully reporting for WOOC 105.3 LP in Troy, New York, at the ICE protest out in front of the United States Department of Homeland Security. There are a number of people here with signs and lots of support from passing motorists. I'm going to go and talk with them and see what they have to say.
My name is Lynette Noonan. I live in Castleton, New York, which is not that far from the Center for Independent Media in Troy.
Excellent. What brings you out here today?
I think the primary thing is the image of children in cages, stories of what is happening to the babies, their parents, toddlers, teenagers. It all seems to me to be unnecessary, and I can't help wondering what is really behind this kind of policy. So I'm here to say I don't think this is right. This doesn't smell right to me. It doesn't seem right or sit right with my understanding of the Constitution and what American principles have stood for over the years. And it just seems like if this doesn't stir Lynette Noonan and these other good people, what in the world will?
My mother's generation fought fascism, and in my view, this treatment of immigrants is a form of fascism. Children are getting numbers. They're being held in cages. They're being charged for, airplane tickets to be returned to their families. It's outrageous. And I'm just very tired of it. I try to stand up and express my opinion as much as possible. So that's why I'm here.
I think it's the least I can do with my privilege to come stand outside and hold a sign and stand up for immigrants. I'm a white person, so obviously I'm the descendant of immigrants. And I'm only a few generations removed. My great-grandparents were all immigrants, and they were Irish and Slavic, so it's not like they were particularly desirable immigrants of the time. It was just a different time. I think it's the very least I can do to be here today, and I will be here for the next one, and I will be here for the next one, and the next one, if ICE ever has the guts to be here when we're here, I will be extra here for that one. I can't believe that they just gave themselves a long weekend because a few peaceful protesters wanted to show up and let them know how we feel about them and what they've been doing to families and asylum seekers.
You know, I'm seeing in the community that I live in raids that are, you know, snatching people up from their families, and you know, people suddenly facing the possibility of being sent to countries that they haven't lived in for decades over, you know, 10-year-old traffic violations. Right, this is a enforcement regime that is designed to terrorize migrants, and it's designed to appease people who want the state to ethnically cleanse this country. It's a white supremacist politics, and it's it should be unacceptable to anybody who doesn't think that is the country that they want to live in.
Well, my name is Gary Lessard, and I'm here kind of representing Schenectady Neighbors for Peace. I heard about it this morning, so I arrived a little bit late today. I just think ICE, and I think Homeland Security, I think is overkill. I think it's corporate sponsored and corporate driven. I think Homeland Security we don't need it. I don't think we need the ICE organization doing what they do. And I think what we ought to do is open the borders to people and have a regular procedure for people to get into the country. And if they're refugees, you know, let's hear about their situation. And give them full consideration as far as getting into the country. And I think we owe it to a lot of countries to provide some refuge for people. And so I'm here to support all those things, and I'm here to especially support the militarization of the whole country against this boogeyman who we're being told is out there trying to get us all the time, throwing rocks at us. And I just don't think the rocks are really going to reach us. I just think this Homeland Security is overkill. And I think it's ICE's overkill, way overkill. And I think the militarization of this country is way overkill. So that's why I'm here.
So a lot of people here are calling for the abolition of ICE, and I think that that's a great place to start. But I think that what really needs to happen is we need to abolish borders and states to allow people to live truly freely.
To support the call to abolish ICE and to end the daily exchanges, because currently ICE offices, police departments, the FBI have been conducting counterterrorism trainings with the State of Israel, and whatever horrendous things they learn over there, they conduct on brown and black bodies in America.
I'm here today to support the abolish of ICE. I came from Guyana when I was a young child in the 90s, and I've experienced a lot of racism. And I'm here to express my feelings as an individual who was an immigrant to stop the discrimination against immigrants. We're human beings. We come here to learn and grow, and we could accomplish so much great things. We're all the same equals as human beings. And just because somebody has a funny accent doesn't give you the right to make fun of them or put them down because you're not familiar with their culture. And we all need to respect each other's culture. We all bleed the same red blood when we're cut.
I'm out here because I've been frustrated with the way in which the national movement has been focused around certain people. People we see as similar to us, or people we see as innocent who don't deserve the kind of abuse that they're receiving. I'm here because I believe that, like, no one deserves the kind of abuse that they're receiving in the immigration system. And I was hopeful that this direct action would be something that would call for more than just a specific policy change with, like, the Families Belong Together movement, or such as DACA, which is actively meant to exclude people seen as who are devalued and seen as labeled as criminals. And so I'm here because I was hoping that this direct action would be a demand for the abolition of ICE, of the Department of Homeland Security, and of opening borders and including goals of, like, prison industrial complex abolition, the military industrial complex abolition, and, like, I was hoping that, that's what this would be.
And if you could give a message to the Trump administration in terms of immigration policy, what would that be?
I would say that you were elected to uphold the Constitution, you are violating the Constitution, and you should cease and desist immediately.
Knock it off! You have no right to be doing any of this. Also, there is no immigration crisis. So stop pretending like there is one.
We know that you're just putting on the show. You're not going to fool us. We'll see through your smoke and mirrors. We know that you guys have plans for us, and we're going to have plans for you.
The message would be that they need to abolish ICE and abolish this unfair targeting of undocumented folks on the way that they're tearing apart families. They need to desecuritize Homeland Security and stop turning immigrants and other people into security risks when they're not.
I think I would say try to believe that the people in the United States have better angels, that in of their nature we have base and greedy components, but we also have what Lincoln or whoever it was said were the better angels of our nature. And I would like them, Stephen Miller and all of the other people in the White House, to consider that we have an optimistic, brighter, positive, compassionate side, and that we need to call upon that right now, every day.
That was Chris Scully speaking with prosecutors at the Abolish ICE rally last Friday at the local office of Homeland Security.
That interview was from our media partners at WOOCLP in Troy, New York, run by the Sanctuary for Media Art. Go to their SoundCloud page, Media Sanctuary, or their Facebook page or web page for the Sanctuary for Independent Media for more information or to hear that full interview.
Germantown-based jazz pianist John Esposito is next with Mockingbird from his 2010 release Orisha.
from the WGXC newsroom. This is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Paul Kirby is reporting for the Daily Freeman. Legislation to name the Saugerties Post Office for the late U.S. Representative Maurice Hinchey has been approved by both houses of Congress. Passage was announced July 9th by U.S. Senator Charles Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand and U.S. Representative John Faso, who co-sponsored the measure. The legislation must now be signed by President Donald Trump for the post office at 111 Market Street in Saugerties to be renamed Hinchey, who lived most of his life in Saugerties, died last November at the age of 79 after battling a rare neurological disorder. He served in the House of Representatives from 1993 until his retirement at the end of 2012. He served in the State Assembly from 1975 to 1992. You can read the full story in the Daily Freeman. Colleen Miller is reporting for the Columbia Green Media. The State Department of Environmental Conservation ended its health advisory for harmful algal blooms at the Kinderhook Lake on July the 6th. The DEC lifted the advisory after visiting the lake and seeing no signs of blooms, according to the Kinderhook Lake Corporation website. The lake is privately owned and managed by the Kinderhook Lake Corporation, Kinderhook Town Supervisor Pat Grattan said. DEC test samples taken June 26 confirmed the presence of cyanobacteria, a harmful algal bloom, in the lake. Exposure to the bloom by touching, swallowing, or inhaling could cause diarrhea, nausea, or vomiting and skin, eye, or throat irritation. Algal bloom can form with an excess of phosphorus and nitrogen and can be exacerbated by hot weather, sunlight, and stagnant water. Despite the DEC advisory, the lake was never closed to swimming, but there are no public swimming points on the lake. Mostly swimming takes place off of private docks. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. The Greenville Pioneer is reporting the Reverend Jeremiah Noonan, 81, has been permanently barred from the ministry, according to an announcement from Bishop Edward B. Staffenberger of the Albany Catholic Diocese. Noonan was barred after the Albany Diocese Review Board found reasonable grounds to believe he had sexually abused a minor in the early 1990s. Noonan has denied the allegations. He is the former pastor of Sacred Heart Parish in Cairo and Our Lady of Knock Mission in East Durham. Noonan was placed on administrative leave 6 years ago and barred from officiating at sacraments, wearing clerical garb, or presenting himself as a priest. An allegation against Noonan received in 2006 and involving alleged abuse in the late 1960s and early 1970s was investigated by an independent mediation assistance program, but could not be substantiated. Noonan joined the Albany Diocese in 1963. After graduating from the seminary in Ireland, he also served as St. Mary's in Hudson and as chaplain for the Columbia Memorial Hospital School for Nursing. Read the full story in the Greenville Pioneer. U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand visited the U.S.-Mexico border July 8th after emerging from the facility in Brownville, Texas, in which 1,200 migrant children are housed. Gillibrand said she was leaving with more questions than answers.
I just came out of one of the HHS facilities. It's a local not-for-profit. They are housing over 1,200 kids in a Walmart. It is a Walmart facility right behind me. No windows, very institutionalized. Cameras everywhere. There's as many employees as there are kids. They are monitored 24/7 in a very intense way. The Trump administration has claimed that the zero-tolerance policy is somehow deterrent to make families and kids not come across the border. Well, we've just heard from the folks here that they've seen no deterrent effect. In fact, they have more kids than ever before. I'm particularly concerned about this deadline at the end of the month. There's about 150 kids who were taken away from their parents here in this facility. Only about a handful have been reunited so far. I don't see how they're going to get these children with their families. They don't have answers. I came here to find answers. I have more questions now than when I came. I'm really concerned.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, wgxc.org. Here is the regional weather forecast for the Hudson Valley and Capital Region.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a 30% chance of showers, maybe thunderstorms, after 10 a.m. on Tuesday. Otherwise, mostly sunny with a high near 83. Low around 60 Tuesday night with another 30% chance of rain. Wednesday should be mostly sunny with a high near 77, a low around 56. Thursday should be sunny with a high near 78 and a low around 59. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, creative community radio.
You're listening to radio news about radio waves. Headlines from the ether. Headlines.
Hudson Valley representatives in Congress, Democrats and a Republican, representing the 18th, 19th, and 20th congressional districts, have all signed up to prosecute pirate radio broadcasters with penalties unlike any before. John Faso, Republican from Kinderhook, and Democrats Sean Patrick Maloney and Paul Tonko are all co-sponsors of H.R. 5709, or the Preventing Illegal Radio Abuse Through Enforcement Act. The Pirate Act most notably raises the maximum fine for broadcasting without a license from $100,000 to $2 million. Currently, the Enforcement Bureau estimates the FCC collection rate at 10% in anti-pirate radio actions. The House's proposal would hasten the FCC's enforcement process and mandate twice-a-year sweeps of the reputed top five pirate markets in the country. There has not been a major bust of any pirate radio station in the Hudson Valley in many years, and the Federal Communications Commission recently cut back its enforcement office. But these three Hudson Valley lawmakers now have a large interest in the issue. Faso has received a $1,000 political donation during the current 2018 campaign from the National Association of Broadcasters. Tonko received $7,000 during the 2016 campaign from the National Association of Broadcasters, and Faso also got $500 from the NAB during the 2016 campaign. At a hearing on June 13th, the House's Subcommittee on Communications and Technology approved the Pirate Act on a voice vote. Next, the proposal heads to the full House Energy and Commerce Committee, where it will likely see amendments with minor changes. There is no current similar bill in the U.S. Senate. This is Tom Rowe reporting for Waveform Standing Wave Radio and WGXC.
Coming up on the WGXC 90.7 FM community program schedule for Tuesday, July 10th, Pete Levensee starts the day in Catskill with the WGXC morning show. He'll be talking in the second hour with Hudson Valley historian Sylvia Hassenkopf about the War of 1812. Corey McCasland is back at 11 a.m. with The Forgotten Geek until noon. And later on at 2 o'clock on Eating It in the Hudson Valley, Phyllis Segura will be talking about vegan cheese and maple syrup with Michael Schwartz of Treeline Tree Nut Cheese in Kingston and Wendy Grossman of Wendy's Nutty Cheese in Phoenicia. After the news hour at 7 o'clock, John D. Thomas will be live in the Hudson studio with Jazz Dreams from 7 to 9:30, followed by Battlefield Earth with Dan Seward from 9:30 to midnight.
Tune in overnight Wednesday, July 11th in the early morning hours for Radio Stew. At 1 a.m., Vital Weekly brings us experimental music from Amsterdam. And then the Foxy podcast is on at 2 a.m. with experimental music from Minneapolis. Radio News at 5 a.m. overnight on Waveform Standing Wave Radio and WGXC.
There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org, including some of these events.
Tuesday, July 10th, there's an opening reception at the Hudson Area Library for the installation Gemini Moon with Congolese artist Ntongo Badilla. Coincides with 3 days of theater and music at the Hudson Opera House, titled "The Badilla Family: A Celebration of Community and Culture." That's July 20th through 22nd at the Hudson Opera House. This show's July 10th at 6 p.m. to 7:30. The opening reception. The Greenville Zoning Board meets Tuesday, July 10th at 7 p.m. at the Greenville Town Hall. WGXC urges people in attendance at any town meeting to take out their cell phone, make a recording,
or do a live web stream through the WGXC app that's available in the App Store. Thursday, July 12th, the documentary Earth, One Amazing Day is at the Village of Coxsackie Hall at 6 p.m. It's part of their environmental documentary series. Call Jeffrey at 518-478-5414 for more information. The Bridge Street Theater begins a show Thursday, July 12th called The Revenge of the Space Pandas, or Binky Rudik and the Two-Speed Clock. That's at 7:30 p.m. July 12th. It's a comedy by David Mamet. And it claims it's for the whole family, although he's known for his language. I guess this show is a family show. With 8 performances through July 22nd at the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill. Friday, July 13th, there is a Lumpland coloring workshop with local musician Emily Ritz at Drop Forge and Tool in Hudson, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. The Revenge of the Space Pandas, or Binky Rudik and the Two-Speed Clock, continues at the Bridge Street Theater Friday, July 13th, with the performance at 7:30 p.m. PS21 hosts the Winifred Horan Trio, with Irish fiddler Winifred Horan, a member of Cherished Ladies, and also co-founded the Irish group Solace. That's at PS21 in Chatham, Friday, July 13th. Also Friday, July 13th, the Yada Diada International Folkloric Theater is at PS21 in Chatham.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is Echo. You are listening to WJFC Agra, creative, community, magical radio.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, heard weekday mornings here at 8 o'clock on WGXC 90.7 FM. WGXC is hosting its pledge drive, and we need your support. Help keep hands-on creative community radio alive in your region by calling 518-697-7400. That's 518-697-7400. Or you can pledge online with your tax-deductible pledge at wgxc.org/donate. That's wgxc.org.